From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with some disturbing statistics. There have been 22 homicides in the city of Rochester since the start of this year alone, and more than 70% of those deaths have been from gun-based violence. Data on both the national and local levels shows a rise in gun violence. And think about how different things have been in 2021 compared to previous years. Here are some numbers. In Rochester, just the first 3 months of this year, there were 17 homicides. The first 3 months of last year, there were 6. The first 3 months of 2019, there were 5. The first 3 months of 2018, there were 2. Many of these are cold cases, leaving families to be lacking closure after already dealing with the trauma of losing a loved one. What is attributing to the rise in violence? What tangible steps can be taken to curb it? These are questions state and local leaders and anti-gun violence advocates have been exploring. And this hour, we talk to them about their most recent efforts to curb the violence and to support victims and their families. Let me welcome our guests now. Jeremy Cooney is a New York State Senator for District Number 56. Senator Cooney, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Evan.
Serena Cotton is the founder of Rock the Peace, who lost her son to gun violence. Serena, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Tony Nelson is a member of Rise Up Rochester, who also lost a son to gun violence. Tony, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Pastor Sherita Trawick, senior pastor and founder at Young and Gifted Global Ministries. Pastor Trawick, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Evan.
I'm going to ask all four of you just for some opening thoughts about why we think this year has been different. And I'll start with Senator Cooney. Jeremy, what do you think is going on here?
Well, first let me start by reflecting on the fact that I feel that every time we open up our phones or websites or hear the news that there's more and more violence happening in our community. And this morning's shooting was no different, which actually occurred in the district that I represent in the state Senate. You know, this is my hometown. I grew up here, and I'm just so frustrated and sad. You know, I'm new to the legislature, but I'm not new to Rochester. This is my hometown, and we know that a lot of the issues with gun violence and violence overall are deep-rooted issues that have been in our community for many, many years. What I think is, you know, one differentiating factor that's occurring now is that, and by the way, this is, Rochester's not unique in this. I have the opportunity to talk with my colleagues in the Senate across upstate New York and downstate. There was a shooting in Times Square recently. I know Buffalo has seen a dramatic increase in gun violence. And I think the shared concern that we've been talking about at the state level is we know that gun violence generally increases in the warmer months, and here we are getting into that season. But I think even more so, people have been tucked away, whether they've been quarantining, we haven't had as many public events, there hasn't been enough opportunity, we've had an increased level of stress because of unemployment, because of the, you know, anything related to the pandemic in general, lack of access to childcare and healthcare concerns. All of that is unfortunately coming together at this moment, and we need real action, and we need more investment, and I'm just really heartened to be here with all of these incredible panelists.
And we're grateful for all of your time as we explore possible solutions here. Serena Cotton, what have you made of what we've seen so far in the city this year? Why do you think this is happening?
I can agree with Senator Cooney. And it's, these young folks need jobs and guidance and love. And it, I wish I had the answer. We've been joining forces with other organizations to try to come up with a plan, come up with something to figure this thing out. I mean, it's a lot, you know, of retaliation and things of that nature. And we just have to come together and just figure out what to do.
Toni Nelson, what do you think is going on?
I think that I'm going to piggyback off of Jeremy and Serena. I think that, yeah, lack of jobs is one part of it, lack of support. I think that these young people are seeking or lack love. They lack respect and they lack empathy, because you have to be a soulless person to open fire in a store where there are other people other than your target. You have to be just uncaring and soulless to open fire at somebody walking down the street when the sidewalk is crowded, or shooting at another vehicle. Bullets have no names. You don't know who you're going to hit. And clearly you just don't care. So if, you know, if we understood that, absolutely, you may hit your target and then that person's gone. But you know what? There's a whole community that's hurting and that's affected and that mourns that person. And if you put yourself in that person's shoes and think about your mother and your father and your aunts and uncles and nieces and how they would feel if it was you, possibly you would think twice. But I don't know. I just think that they need more love, respect, and empathy for their fellow person.
Pastor Trawick, what do you think is going on?
I would just agree with all the things that have already been said. You know, our young people, they need something to live for. You know, they need to realize that when I pick up this gun, not only the ramifications of what's on the other side, but also for themselves. You know, they need to know that they have a choice, that they have an opportunity to, you know, graduate from a good school and to get a job and to make a living for their family, that they have a community to come back to that's worth living for, and that they can make a difference in their community. And, you know, I think that that's partly on us as a community to make those things a fruition for them, to show them pathways to good jobs, you know, not just for a temporary job, but for a job that has benefits, that they can work and, you know, help them build their family, to show them communities that are thriving around them, not just in some areas, but in all the areas, you know, where houses are being rebuilt and resources are being put in their communities, so that they when they're making that decision of, do I take this path or that path, that there's some choice there. Right now, I don't see that there's a delineation between that. It's like, you know, I'm just going to do whatever because I got nothing to live for. So how can I care about somebody else if I don't care about myself? Right. So, yeah.
Well, just to kind of put this in perspective a little bit more with numbers, and I'm always careful with the numbers, need to help guide us to understand what's actually happening. But in a moment, I certainly want to ask Serena and Toni about just the human cost here. It's not just numbers. These are people. In the year 2018, 19 people in Rochester died to firearm violence, gun violence, 19 victims to gun violence in 2018, 22 victims to gun violence in 2019. It nearly doubled to 43 last year, from 22 to 43 from 2019 to 2020. And we are already at 16. We are nearly sitting here in May, not halfway through the year, nearly at the number of gun-based killings and deaths in this community as we were in 2018 for the whole year. I mean, it is unmistakable to see the trend line. And Serena, every time you hear this, I guess I want to ask you how you're doing. I mean, does this change for you over time? Does it get any easier? Does it get more difficult, you know, having lost a son?
Just like I would tell you before, nothing has changed. It's like each time a young person, each time I hear about a young person getting shot or worse, dying from their wounds, it takes you back. And I'm sure Toni will feel the same way. It just takes you back to the feeling of my Christmas, and it's so heartbreaking that, you know, the more you try to get the ease through the pain of your own, the more young folks are killing each other. So it takes away us trying to ease through our own pain, because the mother come out. And you just want to wrap your arms around all these young folks and, like, stop it. It's just stop. You know, enough is enough. And it hurts. It really does. It really hurts.
Well, and let me ask Tony Nelson about that. You know, I mean, I hear in Serena's voice the desire for people to understand, even if you don't feel it, somebody loves you. This community loves you. You don't have to go a certain direction. It really does seem to me, again, I know it comes up time and time again, Tony, but it does seem to me that hurt people hurt people. That doesn't excuse it at all. It is trying to understand a little bit more about it. What happens to you over time, having lost a son, when you see what's going on in this community? What is it like for you personally?
Personally, I get upset. Every time you see the news and you know exactly the steps another mom or dad is going to have to take to get ready to bury their child. You know the confusion they face when they first hear the news. And then I honestly get pissed off. Because just like with my son and my husband, and I've also lost three cousins to homicide, two are still unsolved, I get pissed because I don't, when you hear the reasons, you're just like, what? Like, are you kidding me? I don't understand it. I'm like Serena, you do want to put your arms around these young people because clearly they're lacking something. There's a lack of something. Support, love, guidance. I left my job of 17 years to go to work for a not-for-profit that has a young adult reentry program because I felt like, okay, what can I do? What more can I do? All right, I don't need to make these chemicals because that's not fulfilling me. Maybe I can get in really in the trenches and see what it is they need and what can I do? Because if I can help just one, that's where I'm going with it. Because there's something lacking. A lot of times they won't tell you. They don't want to talk to you. You want to listen. You want to hear them out. But some of these young people, I don't know if they are ready to receive the love, the help, the support. Some are, some are not. So I don't know because, Evan, honestly, I get so hurt. It takes me back to the day I found out about my son and everything that surrounded that whole situation. And it just, it's very hurtful.
There's nothing anybody can say, as you know, Tony. I mean, I wish there was something I could say that isn't trite or just sort of useless in this because, I mean, there's nothing I can say to you that's going to bring people back to you. I just have...
Nope.
I have so much empathy and love for you. And I think about, you know, Pastor Trawick, I think about people like Tony, well, really people like Serena and so many others in our community who've not only lost somebody, but some of the families and some of the moms and some of the people who have lost loved ones in this community don't get closure with at least knowing what happened, who did this and why. There are cold cases. And I know you wanted to do some, you know, you started cold case walks because of that. Tell me a little bit about that, Pastor Trawick.
Appreciate that. So basically, I was having a conversation with Serena and some of the ladies from Rock the Peace, and in listening to their stories, because that is important also, you know, to hear the stories, that human factor. So in listening to their stories of losing their children and their loved ones, there was a particular woman who mentioned that it had been 13 years since she didn't have any leads on her son's case, and how she had gone down to the police station on the anniversary of his death every year. And, you know, they still had nothing. And she's been doing this for 13 years. And then there were other people that spoke up and said, it's been 5 years for me. It's been this amount of time. And so it bothered me. And, you know, much like Tony, I said, Lord, what can I do? At least let's have a conversation with the police department and figure out, you know, why are these cases unsolved? Where are they? So I spoke to Serena and asked if her group, Rock the Peace, would allow me to partner with them, our organization, Young and Gifted, to partner with them and set up a meeting with the police chief. So we did that. So we have been meeting now with the police chief and the chief investigator to talk about these cases. There are 600 cold cases that are unsolved. We learned that information through these meetings. But to also find out, you know, what is it that we can do as almost a civilian peace force to go out there and help to get answers. So what we came up with was this hash, we call it hashtag cold case. And so it's Rock the Peace and Young and Gifted Global Ministries. And we've done one walk so far. We go to the murder site and the parents tell their story. We pray and we walk the community and we pass out flyers with the children that have been murdered. We have their pictures on there and the information. We partner with Crime Stoppers. So if people do know something or see something, they can call the Crime Stoppers. They can also call Rock the Peace directly. And what we have found, Evan, I just want to just say this, is that people do remember. You know, when we did the first one, there were people in the community. It was a double homicide. And people said, I remember those boys. I remember when this happened. You know, we've been asking questions, too. So we want the community to speak up because they have the answers. People, there are people that know stuff. And if they speak up and we can get in the habit of speaking up, maybe we can solve some of this and get to it before it actually happens.
Well, Senator Cooney, you recently had an online conversation with New York State Attorney General Letitia James. That was in April. And, you know, some of the panelists were community partners in anti-gun violence and in the movement here. And I'm curious to know, if number one, if you felt like you found some things to work with from that conversation. And if there are some, I mean, any easy or obvious steps would probably have already been taken. So, you know, I don't mean to be too reductive here. But if there are ideas on perhaps your own agenda for the community or even for the state legislature that you think are within reach here.
Absolutely. First, let me build off something that Pastor Trawick just said, which I think is spot on. And first of all, Pastor Trawick, thank you for your leadership with these cold cases. That is a great program and so needed. Pastor Trawick talked about starting with listening. I have felt that too many politicians, you know, state level politicians, local level politicians, they seem to always have an answer, right? But they don't start with listening to the communities and the moms and the individuals who have been impacted by gun violence. And so that was the genesis for me picking up the phone and calling the chief law enforcement officer for the state of New York, who is Tish James, the attorney general. And I said, look, we are in crisis here in Rochester. We need help, and you need to come and talk to not only the advocates, but also the community members who are in crisis. And, you know, obviously with COVID, this was an online Zoom-based event, but we had about 103 folks who were participating in that Zoom, mostly from the city of Rochester, although a few of our neighbors from the suburban towns. And, you know, she listened. She did a lot of listening. Something that I think that stood out to me in that roundtable conversation between the advocates, the attorney general, and myself is that she said something that I don't think we often hear in the conversations around gun violence, which is that you can't just have a conversation about taking a gun out of a person's hand. It's about what are you going to replace in that person's hand, right? Is it going to be a college or a high school diploma, GED? Is it going to be keys to an affordable apartment? Is it going to be cash relief? Is it going to be an opportunity for a job? You know, we always look about from a deficit-minded approach. We're taking something away. We're going to punish you for having that gun. But we're not necessarily replacing anything in those people's hands. And, you know, that what that really kind of, I think, gave some good context for action in that roundtable is that there's two ways to kind of look at this issue. One is the incredible work that Rock the Peace and Rise Up Rochester and Moms Demand Action, Students Demand Action, Heels of Greatness, all these incredible organizations that are doing great work in Rochester. In addition to what City Hall is doing with, you know, Pathways to Peace, et cetera. All of these great groups are doing a lot of violence interruption work. They're listening. You heard what Pastor Trevick talked about with cold cases. That's awesome. And we need more resources so that they can continue to do their work. But on a parallel track, we need to get back to what we talked about earlier in the show today, which is how do we get a good paying job? How do we give an alternative? How do we inspire hope for individuals who feel like there's no other way than to take an escalated conflict to gun violence? And so for me, as a state lawmaker, it's not necessarily about punishing one group or another, or, you know, creating stricter rules. It's about finding resources so that we can get to the root of the problem. So many children who are involved and witness gun violence are facing trauma the rest of their lives. We have to recognize that when young people are exposed to gun violence, and you know, whether it's in their own family or whether it's in their neighborhood or their block, you know, that's going to impact them the rest of their lives. And we need to make sure that they have the mental health resources, that they have the educational resources and tools, the social emotional supports, so that they're able to be productive and to have an alternative other than violence. Because the data shows that those who have been impacted by gun violence often sometimes turn to gun violence later on in their lives. It's a vicious cycle. It takes too many lives. And so how do we break that? And so that's kind of what, from an action perspective, is kind of something that I'm focusing on is, you know, yes, we passed the ghost gun ban in February in the state Senate. And for those of you who don't know what the ghost gun ban is, we know that guns are coming into our communities, just like Rochester, at far too fast of a pace. And now with technology, you know, you can do it yourself gun creation and modifications. Some people are using 3D printers to create firearms. And so this was legislation called the Jose Webster Firearms Act, which would criminalize the sale of those ghost guns, per se. So we can do things like that. And I was proud to support that legislation. But we also have to find resources so that people have alternatives. And that's where I'm looking to the community to help guide my understanding and how we can provide more opportunities like YamTap, for example, which creates jobs in the city of Rochester for people who don't have necessarily college degrees or even high school degrees, but want to work and don't want to turn into a violent situation.
Let me ask you, your co-panelist, Senator Cuney, what they next want to see from government, and it could be really at any level. Serena Cotton, what do you want to see next from elected leaders, whether it's in Rochester or at the state level or any other level of government? What do you want to see?
Well, I want to see everyone coming together. That's the main thing. A lot of times, sorry for the background noise. A lot of times, everything and everyone is separated. But if everyone can come to the table and bring ideas to the table, that's something that I truly want to see. And whatever we can do as far as bringing jobs, because, I mean, we all saying the same thing, because that's what's important, is having these jobs. But as we out walking, we give resources to the folks that are out there, because everyone is not on social media. So we give resources to the folks that's out there with jobs, you know, directing them to different jobs or whatever. So they just have to take the bait and apply or ask for assistance to apply. But jobs and coming to the table together, all organizations, all city officials, all senators and everyone else coming to the table.
Tony Nelson, what do you want to see? You might be on mute, Tony.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem.
I'm gonna jump on Serena's comment, my sister. Yeah, jobs. But more than jobs, where's the money for training? Why can't we, when I was coming up, we had all these programs for teenagers and, you know, preteens and even, you know, up to 21, 22. Why can't we teach them how to be plumbers and electricians? Where's the training? A lot of these young people are so intelligent. They're so intelligent. If you can sell drugs, you can run a business, okay? It's just, what option do you have? You know, what's in front of you? So we need money. We need money for programs. We need money for jobs. Not jobs, careers. Because, see, when I was coming up, my aunts and uncles, they had careers. They had Kodak. They had General Motors. They had products. Even Ragu. I had an uncle at Ragu. They had careers. Now you'd be lucky to keep a job for 5 years, you know, at some places in Rochester for different reasons, but my goodness, you know, there's, it's almost like there's nothing out here, so they'd rather just take their chances in the street. So let's get some money in Rochester and start some programs where we're training these young people to have careers, because you know what? We're going to always need electricity. We're going to always need our toilets and sinks to work. So let's start teaching them something that they can use at home and they can use as a career.
Well said. Pastor Trawick, what do you think?
I agree with what's been said as well. I think we start exactly with what we're doing here, is by talking to the people that are on the ground, boots on the ground already. I don't think we have to reinvent the wheel. I think we have some great pieces that exist already, like Rise Up Rochester, Rock the Peace, and others. I think there are some good training programs. Like Serena said, we have to bring all those efforts together. A lot of those programs need more resources, like Senator Cooney alluded to. So we need to make sure that they're getting the resources they need so that we can duplicate their efforts. And then, you know, just we have to take this narrative back, you know, and maybe that's the pastor in me. But, you know, we got to talk about the things that are working as well. I know the numbers are the numbers, but we also have some kids that are trying hard. They're at that point that where they can make this choice or that choice, and they want to make a good choice. And so we got to get in front of them, and we got to show them that there are things available. The summer's coming up. What do our summer programs look like? Are they just geared toward our younger kids? Do we have stuff that our teens are going to want to engage in that go beyond our summer youth employment, but that will actually go in and talk to some of these kids that are on the street? And how do we get to them? Through our grassroots organizations. To me, that's the key. Work with the people that are on the ground and say, hey, what are you hearing? What do your kids need? You know, so that's where I think that I would like to see that go. And we need some billboards of hope. One of the things that the Cold Case Files were trying to do is we're looking for funding right now to put some billboards up that send some positive messaging out there. So when kids look up and look around, they can see there is hope. Here's a program over here. Here's a program over there. We gotta bombard them with this hope that we're selling, if we're really going to do it. Then we gotta put our money behind it, and we gotta work with the groups that are already on the ground.
I just want to highlight one thing that I think is really important for all of us to keep in mind. We live in an increasingly sort of polarized world, and we think about politics, we think about social issues, we think about our communities in sometimes very polarized ways. And I just want to say that Serena Cotton, Tony Nelson, Sherita Trawick have given us all the evidence you need that whatever polarized one side or the other view of how the world works, you can set that aside. And here's what I'm talking about when it comes to violence. Once in a while, I get emails. Thankfully, it's not anywhere near the majority, but it happens. We get emails that are pretty racist, and they're usually, you know, suburban, rural, white people saying things like, well, it's the, you know, it's such and such culture. It's a culture issue, you know, and how come you never report on black-on-black crime? I hear that all the time. What that does is it ignores literal decades of economic dispossession, of creating a society that benefited some but not all intentionally. And then you look around and go, well, I can't believe that person robbed a store. I'm not justifying it, But that's what happens. We want to have this collective amnesia. So the one side says it's all individual responsibility, and it's just that community can't clean itself up. And a lot of that's racist, but some of that I think is probably kind of just oversimplified. But listen to Tony Nelson, listen to Serena Cotton, listen to Pastor Trawick. They're not accepting this. While they point out the complexity, while they point out we need jobs, we need training, we need a chance that so many other communities have that we never had, that our kids don't feel like they have. And at the same time, damn right we're going to clean this up from within. It is not acceptable, even if we don't have the hope. You cannot grab a gun and point it at anybody. They're not going to accept that. They've lost people. But it is much more complex than just, well, it's just a big societal problem and add jobs and that'll fix everything versus, well, it's all just individual culture problem. They are doing the work on the ground level, and then they've got advocates like Senator Cooney who are trying to listen and say, what can we do at the level of government, the level of opportunity? It is not just one thing. If it were, I promise we wouldn't be here. And I have so much love and respect for our guests who have gone through so much. Serena Cotton, founder of Rock the Peace, who lost her son to gun violence. Tony Nelson has lost family members, including a son to gun violence. He's a member of Rise Up Rochester. Pastor Sherita Trawick, senior pastor and founder at Young and Gifted Global Ministries. And State Senator Jeremy Cooney with us. Let's take our only break, and your feedback is on the other side. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about the ethics of sports fandom. We know that football can be a violent game. In fact, there was a viral video earlier this week of a 7-year-old child getting leveled at a youth football practice while the adults were laughing. What are the limits of our fandom? What should they be ethically? How can we evaluate ourselves as moral agents when it comes to what we watch in sports? That's next up. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So let me start to work through a lot of listener feedback. We'll get through as much as we can this hour. Listener says, Evan, not a single reference to the trauma of seeing domestic violence as a root cause of what's happening now. Maybe the root cause. Serena Cotton, do you think domestic violence and witnessing domestic violence can be is one of the root causes of what we're seeing with the way young people especially are being violent with one another?
I wouldn't say I don't know if I could say the root cause. I mean, there's a lot of domestic violence, but majority of the violence we're seeing is not domestic violence. We know it's there, but majority of the violence, the street violence, is, I can't say is, I don't want to say it's domestic violence. Just domestic violence. I mean, it's intertwined in there, but that's not the main violence that we're actually seeing. But
okay.
There is
Tony Nelson, do you think that witnessing and domestic violence leads to violence of other kinds, perhaps like the kinds we're seeing this spring? And again, Tony, might be on mute.
It can go one of two ways.
Okay.
Okay. You see your parent, and I'm not going to say your mother because it could be your dad. You see your parent being abused by the other parent, and you can make a decision to never be that person and never do that. Or you can figure that that's the way it's supposed to be and do that and you know, continue the cycle of violence. So no, because at the end of the day, it's a double-edged sword. And you can go either way. It's like you're right on the edge, and it's just something in you that's going to tip you one way or another.
Okay. Pastor Trawick, what do you think? Are you there, Sherita? We might not have you in there.
I was on mute. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
I think we have seen an uptick in domestic violence since the pandemic. So to, you know, to actually to go back to your earlier question of, you know, what's different so far. Yes, we do see more cases of domestic violence, but I agree with Tony. You know, I grew up around domestic violence, not in my immediate household, but family members. And you're right. Yeah, she's right. It can go one of two ways. You know, a trauma is trauma. So whether we're seeing domestic violence or we're seeing gang violence or, you know, street violence or gun violence, it's still trauma. And so I think that we're it may not be one specific thing, like Serena said, specific that's charging this, but all of it needs to be addressed. Do we need to put resources in that arena when we look at domestic violence and trauma? Absolutely. We need to be open to it can be coming from anywhere. The question is, what do we do? It's still trauma. So where do we go from here?
All right. Let me get to some phone calls. This is Ed in East Rochester. Hi, Ed. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. My name is Ed Koska. I'm a retired New York State parole officer. I worked out of the Rochester office for 31 years, and I retired in 2017. I'm like what your panelists have been saying, especially what Senator Cooney said about inspiring hope. And that's a big part for people coming out of prison. You have to give them hope, and you have to give them the opportunity for a better life. Back in 2011, Governor Cuomo put parole operations under the Department of Corrections. Since then, the social work aspect of the parole officer position, which started in 1930, by the way, it's gone. It's completely gone. That's one of the things that led me to retire. And since the pandemic started, the issuance of parole warrants for violent behavior, from what I can gather from old coworkers, has really been minimalized. So essentially, it's an agency that's no longer helping people in the social work way, and it's stopped doing any kind of community protection in terms of incarceration. They've really limited that amount statewide. I don't agree that incarceration is the only way to solve problems. I think there are other ways to do it. But I think since there's a vacuum, that there's nothing else there in terms of the social work aspect to the job and the interactions with parolees, that I wonder if there's a causation or a coincidence here in Rochester. There are approximately 2,000 parolees in Monroe County. Most of them are in Rochester.
Senator Cooney, what do you think?
Well, first of all, thanks, Ed, for your service. And I can tell you the reentry conversation and the parole conversation have been big learning opportunities since we took office on January 1st. It is shocking. And for the listeners today, I can't wait to unveil some legislation for you, because it is shocking how we treat people in our community who have served their time, who have paid the debts to society, and who are trying to move on with their lives by getting a job, getting an apartment, reuniting with their family, being a contributing member to our community. And we make it so darn hard to do so. And, you know, Eddie, your comments are taken well, because we spend most of our resources, trying to put people back in prison versus helping them, be productive members of society. And this really is about reinvesting in people. And so I want to go back to something that Serena and Tony said before the break, which is that we have had a loss of careers in Rochester. I mean, my grandfather worked at Kodak. We all know the stories. But when we talk about education and our Rochester City School District in particular, which I'm a graduate of, we have to focus on that vocational path, because not every student will find their way to college, and they may not want to go to college. And that's okay, because we are going to have a crisis of jobs in this community very soon, because we have a number of our skilled trade workers, plumbers, electricians, that are retiring. And these are really good paying jobs. You know, when it comes to gun violence, I tell folks all the time, no one really chooses to do this type of violence or to get involved in the drug trade because they think it's the best thing for them. They have no other option. And they don't know any way else to move on. They have so little resources. And if life changes, all the jobs that they see in Rochester, minimum wage jobs, people are working so hard. They're working three shifts, but they're not getting by. They're not being able to provide for their family. And so we can't have a conversation about reducing gun violence without having a conversation about poverty reduction and ending poverty, especially childhood poverty, right here in the city of Rochester. And so I'm glad the caller raised those issues, some of the barriers to entry for parolees.
Well, Jeremy, I'm going to ask you to elaborate on that point in just a second, and along with the rest of our guests, because I have an email from a listener who I think, I don't know, I'm tired, man. It's been a long week. I am sad. This is not the conversation that anybody wants to be part of here. This is not the life that Serena Cotton, Tony Nelson, so many others would have envisioned for their families. But they are doing the work here. And so Michael writes to say, so Evan, it's racist because someone doesn't agree with your politically correct political views? How judgmental. I think we have a problem with so many shootings and stabbings because too many young people think that violence is a problem solver. What's your solution to that? Yes, Michael. Yeah, that's exactly right. We have a problem because too many people turn to stabbing and shooting as a solution to violence. That's exactly what Serena and Tony and Sharita are trying to stop in their community by doing the work. And that is exactly what I agree with. The part that is racist is when I hear from white listeners who tell me that's a black problem. Like that's an inherently black problem. That's the racist thing, Michael. And I don't mean to get angry here. Trust me here. Nobody wants to be dealing with these problems. But if you set up a society where for decades, if not centuries, some people have benefits, some people have money, some people have housing, and other people are denied that, and then you start to go, well, you know, look, we took those restrictions off. What's wrong? What's wrong with you guys? How come you can't make it work? This is a long process to solve, Michael. I want to solve it too. I don't want people to feel like violence is a way out here. And Serena's not going to stand for that. Sharita's not going to stand for that. Tony's not going to stand for that. State Senator Cooney's not going to stand for that. Nor will I. All I'm saying is this is not inherently a problem that black people have that white people don't have, or that, you know, black and brown people have, or whatever. Whatever. You should see some of the emails I get, and I'm sick of it. That's what I'm saying. It's complex, and the way to do it is not just to tell people to do a better job of solving their violence issues. I mean, that they're going to try, but this is, we've got some structural stuff built in, and some of it's something that we chose as a country going back a long, long time. That's what I mean by that. This is not just because, quote, black people are more violent. I'm sorry. Senator Cooney, go ahead.
Listen, you know, you're speaking truth to power right there. I mean, look, we had a conversation in earlier part of the legislative session this year around legalization of adult use recreational marijuana. We didn't pass that law because we wanted to give everyone access to marijuana. We passed that law because we knew that it was criminalizing and had a disproportionate impact on black and brown communities. And this is not new. This war on drugs had been taking away communities and arresting members of our community for decades. And we had to right a social wrong. And so if you compare that to now our gun violence issues in the city of Rochester, this is the product of disinvestment over decades. The jobs moving out of the city of Rochester so that people in the city who can't afford to move out to the suburbs can't get to those jobs anymore. Taking away the community resources, whether they're parks and pools and job training centers and libraries, and we have a lot of them, but we don't have enough to meet the need of our kids today. By the, you know, removing resources and disinvesting in our public school districts over decades. Now, we're working to fix that, as you know, in Albany. But we are dealing with the fact that our kids who are going to school don't have a nutritious meal to eat during the day, don't have enough social workers to deal with housing situations and all of the social determinants of health that are the result of a population where 48% of our children in the city of Rochester are deemed below the federal poverty level. That doesn't happen overnight. It's been happening since I was a kid growing up in the city of Rochester. So I feel that anger and that frustration. And you're exactly right, Evan. And the question is, what are we going to do about it? And it can't be done overnight. But what we can do is we can start making these investments and empower the amazing women that we have on this panel today to be able to continue to do their work, because they know what's best. And they know that they have the authentic relationships in the community, in the neighborhoods that have been most impacted by gun violence.
Mm. Well, let's ask them just for some thoughts and forgive me there. Serena Cotton, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Evan, for getting upset. I can't even get your name because I'm that upset.
That's all right.
It's always going to be someone with the it's the black people. But I don't know if y'all noticed, there's more than black people that's doing killings, that's robbing people, that's out standing out here on these corners begging for money and lost in the drug game as far as being an addict. There's a lot of people that's not black that's doing things as well. So we can't put it all on black people. There's everyone, for one thing. And just like others said, put money into stuff. We have a youth group within Rock the Peace. Y'all want to help us out? Send us some dollars so we can help, so we can do more. You know, we're out here. And, you know.
Where do they find you, Serena? Rock the Peace, where do they find you?
Well, our phone number, 585-708-9787. And they can email us. We have a website, rockthepeace.org, that needs to be updated. But we have a email address, business@rockthepeace, that's rockthepeace.com. And just reach out. We have a couple of, our Why My Baby group for parents. That's a support group for parents and grandparents that lost children to violence. And Youth for Peace is our youth group that lost parents and siblings to violence by death or prison, because those are the kids that get lost. You know, they family member, parent do something, go to prison, and no one thinks about the children that's left behind. So, yeah.
Tony Nelson, what do you think?
You know what? There's so much ignorance going around. I know it's always been there, but with social media, it seems more prevalent. I can't help but think back to those disgusting school meals that people said, well, if you can't afford to send lunch with your kid, don't have kids. And these people wouldn't have fed that crap to their dogs, okay? So, I'm sorry, my dog's going nuts. What I would say is, if you want to know what's going on and you want to know how to help, contact Rise of Rochester at riseofrochester.net. Contact Serena at Rock the Peace and come to us and do the work. Don't just have an opinion about it. Don't just sit and talk out of the side of your neck about it. Come over here and do the work, because, see, we're out here walking. We're out here marching. We're doing car parades. We're doing Stop the Violence cookouts. We're doing Stop the Violence billboard contest in the city school district. We're out here. We're the credible messengers. We're the ones doing the work. You talk about shootings in the city. Shootings in the city by black people. Not only black people do shootings. That's just like saying pedophilia is a white problem. I mean, let's be real. When you have shootings in the suburbs, they're mass shootings. And then there's a suicide to follow. So shootings are not just a black problem. Let's really think about what we're saying here. Mm-hmm.
30 seconds, Pastor Trawick. Final thoughts. Go ahead.
It's an everybody problem, just what Tony said. Exactly. It's an everybody problem. You know, I don't live in the city. I was born and raised in the city, but I live in Greece. And the reason it's my problem is because
kids, we are raising children that are experiencing, whether personally or through social media or through the news, they are still experiencing these trauma. You know, the misnomer is you have to actually, you know, be personally impacted, and that's not true. Mm-hmm. You can watch it on the news and be impacted. I'm involved because I care. Mm. And we need people to realize it's a countywide problem. And the caller said, well, what can we do? Let's push in conflict resolution in our schools, starting from K-1. Teaching kids how to de-escalate that violence, how to handle situations in a peaceful way. Let's do that. Let's put money behind that. Let's teach kids how they can go out and make meaningful lives and careers for themselves. Let's put money with that. It's all about people caring and putting resources behind that.
I'm going to lose you, Pastor. I just want to say we'll put all the resources online for listeners to contact all these groups. And to Senator Cooney, Serena Cotton, Pastor Trawick, and Tony Nelson, all the love. You are absolutely doing the work. Thanks for what you're doing. We've got more connections coming up in a moment.